Hello.
Hi.
And ho, 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 and happy holidays. Welcome back to another episode of Old Millennials. This is a little mini holiday episode and not quite a deep dive into the late 90s and early 2000s as you're so accustomed, but a conversation about Pitchfork's best albums of the 2010s and also a little bit of our Spotify Wrapped that took over everybody's Instagram stories, where you had to click through so many times about people's personal artists, of which you have little to zero association with because you do not care. The only one that you think is interesting is your own. Yes, we're going to talk about our Spotify Wrapped. My Artist of the Decade is quite embarrassing, but also expected.
Yeah, mine is just a reminder that I am someone's dad, really, on the inside. Also, that my Unwrapped for this year, I love my sister, hate that she lived with me for 2 months and used my Echo while I was at work, because it means that some of her terrible songs that she played on repeat made my Unwrapped. And ladies and gentlemen, as I found out, you cannot delete those from your playlist, and so I am stuck with songs by the British 90s boy band Take Back on my Unwrapped.
Oh, is Camille okay?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, not the outside.
That is like a bizarre throwback.
It was so strange. Like, I knew she'd listen to the song a lot, but I figured it was on her phone or whatever. And then I got my Unwrapped this year, and they're like, man, you really like the band Take That. I'm like, fuck.
Well, my coworker, her Artist of the Decade was Taylor Swift. She's like, I can't even blame this on my daughter because she's only one. I'm like, yes, that is correct.
At least she admits to it. What was your top artist for this year?
It's
decade, I guess. Sorry.
My decade artist is Drake. It's so embarrassing and also just so fucking expected. I'm like disappointed in myself. I'm like, this isn't even cool. I couldn't have even gotten Spoon as my Artist of the Decade. I listened to Spoon a lot, but no, it's fucking Drake. Because as you pointed out when I told you, when his career started to take off was like right around the time that I got a full-time job after college, so I paid for Spotify Premium, and guess who really loved Drake and would listen to him all of the time at work and on BART, and then went and saw him live. Anyway, so yeah, am I surprised? No. I mean, I listened to Scorpion like a bajillion times last year, so, you know, well, I'll see myself out.
Mine was Fleetwood Mac.
See, that's cool. Drake is not cool.
Cool.
Stevie Nicks
is
cool.
Yeah,
Drake, not cool. Drake is hitting up 17-year-olds, Emily. This is a real bad look for me. And Stevie Nicks is out here, like, supporting Harry Styles. Like, what is Drake doing? He's being creepy.
I know.
What am I doing? What am I doing? You know, I thought, you think you trade in skaters for another type of fuckboy as you get older, whether it's, like, an imaginary crush or, like, someone you really have to deal with in real life. And, you know, you look back and you're just like, wow, I should have made maybe better choices.
I ask myself that sometimes. Yeah, what was I really thinking? I mean, my top artist, Kanye was up there for me, for sure.
Just like, Kanye as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, just Kanye as a whole. I think, like, definitely in the earlier part of that decade was when I started paying for a premium membership, so that's, you know, why it's going to show up. The other big ones for me, singer, songwriter, indie, stoner-ish girls that came out in, like, the last 10 years or so. I had a lot of, like, Best Coast, Haim, Angel Olsen, Richards, Courtney Barnett. I listen to a lot of sad girl rock at certain points.
I mean, Jay-Z was my artist of the year for 2014 and 2015. Like, I really do need to branch out. Yeah, you know what? I really love that Unplugged album, and when they took it off Spotify, I was fucking devastated. And so when it came back, I seriously listened to it, like, 3 days in a row at work. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. But Fiona Apple was my artist of 2012, which is interesting because that's the same year that her album came out, and that's number 5 on the Pitchfork Best Albums list. So I definitely love Fiona. We're still waiting on our Fiona vinyl. Dude, have you called?
I emailed them.
I've emailed them so many times, and their answer is, we don't know where it is. I'm like, okay, look, this vinyl, I would obviously want to listen to it, but it's not like we paid like $5 for it. Like, it was really expensive.
So, backstory, Margaret and I are both huge Fiona Apple fans. We talk about her all the time on our podcast. I got an Instagram ad, which, like, fuck you, Zuckerberg.
But also, thank you. That's why I have a Buffy sweater. If I wasn't so fucking predictable, I wouldn't own the greatest sweater I've ever owned.
I wouldn't have David Bowie boots. Like, this is, it's insane. So
we're all Pavlov's dog.
We really are. I got an ad, the title was available on vinyl, and I immediately...
Title, Fiona Apple's first album, not title, Jay-Z's failed music streaming service. Just to be clear, since I was talking about Jay-Z earlier.
Yeah, so we both ordered it while we were prepping for an episode recording a couple weeks back.
Multitaskers.
Weeks go by, months at this point.
It's like, we're getting into over a month because it was like, it was right before Thanksgiving, right? Because you hadn't, you were about to leave to go home and I had just come back from LA.
I set us up to not get a sponsorship out of Vinyl Me Please if one day our podcast gets
They should give us Spawn for the inconvenience of being like, oh, we've only filled 70% of our Black Friday orders. I'm like, okay, but you guys can't, like, take the order number and, like, put it into a computer and see where it is. The same shit is going down with a pair of Adidas I ordered. I am on the brim. I don't mean to turn this into an episode about me complaining about buying things online, but... To bring it back to Fiona Apple, we're very anxiously anticipating the vinyl release of Tidal soon. But since Tidal came out in, what, 1997?
Yeah, something like that. I'm shocked your excuse is that you only fulfilled 70% of your Black Friday order. Don't start spending all this money on Instagram ads.
I mean, honestly, like, this is why I drink. It's like, it's fine. I just can't do anything about it. It's not a big deal. But back to Fiona Apple. In 2012, it had been years since she had released a new album. And so I wouldn't say it was eagerly anticipated because I don't think anybody knew to expect it from her because she is such a weird bird. And I mean that as like the biggest compliment. That's primarily why I like her so much is because she's so weird. And thanks to this album, not only did we get Fiona Apple music and great Fiona content because she had to give interviews to support it. I mean, even though she's Fiona Apple and she can give as many or as little interviews as she wants, she also went on tour, so I was finally able to see her live. But best of all, I think that she gave the best interview I think it's like Fiona Apple interview canon is the Marc Maron episode, because I feel like it's a completely different side of her than I've ever seen. And it was very interesting. She goes in depth about how the process of making this album with her longtime collaborator, whose name I'm completely blanking on, like Jonathan Bennett or something to that effect.
It's John Bryan.
Thank you. And how they sort of like trade tracks back and forth. And it was just really interesting. And then she talks about her relationship with the hummingbirds in her backyard. Like, she's truly a fucking trip. And it's one of those things where you're, and it was early enough in Maron's career where you're like, wow, he's really good. Like, Letterman could never. So I highly recommend that in addition to this album, which definitely would be not only in my Spotify rap, but also best albums of 2010s for sure. Pitchfork, they got real Frank Ocean heavy towards the end, which I like Frank Ocean albums. I think they're great as well. But I feel like two in the top five was sort of a lot. You could have just picked one for like number one if that was what we were going to do. But overall, when I was scrolling through the list, I was like, yep, that makes sense. Yep, that makes sense. I feel like it's a pretty balanced list that covered a lot. I love the Arctic Monkeys, and so AM would definitely be on there. And I would also say their Tranquility-based Hotel, although I don't know. I know it's a concept album, and so I don't know if the concept fully presents itself or like lands in the way that they want it to, but I appreciate the amount of thought and effort to make an album that's essentially one long story, even though that's not great for singles. But Arctic Monkeys AM is a great fucking album. That all of their albums are amazing, and you can go back and listen to all of them, and AM just shows that they're the best at what they do. And that came out in 2013, and I know that that was something that I put on repeat quite a bit during that time. I know, but I feel like critically, I understand why she's there. I mean, it's not like that album wasn't well received or anything. So I'm not surprised, just because I don't personally like a lot of shit, but it makes it onto lists all the time. And so unless somebody asks me personally, you know, there's nothing I can really do about it. But I do understand. I just don't care for her.
My favorite thing about this album, though, is that someone via Who Weekly had made a PowerPoint presentation on how Melodrama supports the theory that Jack Antonoff left Lena Dunham for her and, like, calculated the timeline of where they would have met, and songs are about him. And it was fascinating. I mean, it you know, we talked about Drake and his, like, his sliding into people's DMs for underage. Like,
his appreciations for the DMs.
I can't speak. This PowerPoint presentation that I will share with you after this episode, Margo, is one of the greatest works of art that I have ever seen. Just the level of that this person went into to figure out whether or not this was what led to Jack Antonoff's breakup with Lena Dunham. It's just fascinating. But I really like that album. I think the other one, looking at the top 20 and thinking, like, I really was happy to see that. Beach House is at 21. I'm a big Beach House fan. I listened to that album a lot. That's right around the time I graduated college. So, you know, I think a lot of these albums, looking back, are really what I was listening to right when I left school. So, like, LCD Sound System, This Is Happening. Those were kind of the big ones for me. What I am surprised that for how many EDM songs were on the song list.
Oh, my God, I know. There weren't a ton on the album list.
For me, there are a few EDM albums where I really think this changed everything. Like, I'm maybe not the demographic, but I'm happy to see that there was at least this shift when they were talking about best albums.
I think to your point, it's completely valid that it's not like an entire EDM album is going to show a lot of depth or range, because what makes an EDM single popular and what makes an EDM album good are two different sets of criteria that have very little crossover in that Venn diagram, I think. So I was really pleasantly surprised too that there weren't a ton of EDM albums listed on there. I think there were maybe like a few, but they were also albums that featured artists who sing, like a Calvin Harris or something, who has like Rihanna on his track. Like, those are the kinds of albums that they look out for, or like a Mark Ronson. I don't think he made it onto the list, but I did really like his most recent album where he had the single with Rosalia and with Leaky Lee, and I think that there were a lot of really good songs on there. But one of my top artists of 2019 was Vampire Weekend, and I think that that makes a ton of sense. I love Father of the Bride, and I definitely listen to it a lot, but I think personally their best album of the last decade is Modern Vampires of the City from 2013. Contra also makes an appearance on this list, which is also a great album, but I don't know what it is about Modern Vampires of the City. If it was the break in between Contra and this album coming out was like a really good amount of time, and so I was just ready for a Vampire Weekend album. But I think Hannah Hunt is one of their most beautiful songs that they've ever created. And I think that each song is really unique. But, and this is what they also do in Father of the Bride, where I know that he kind of, Ezra Kanin, wanted to go kind of more of a country sort of like duet angle. And you listen to like a lot of Johnny and June Cash songs and some other artists. There's a really interesting interview where he talks about the album on Keep It that I would recommend, where I think it's not too in-depth, but you get a really good idea of what he was thinking when he put it together. But it still feels all of like the same piece, and I really love Father of the Bride, but Modern Vampires of the City I listen to probably more often though.
Mm-hmm. Motion cracked the top 50 on this list. I just recently watched her Tiny Desk concert. I think it came out like a month ago, and just reminded of how much I enjoy her music, how great of a pop artist I think she is, and obviously Emotion really put her on the map in terms of being more than just kind of Call Me Maybe. Just definitely someone I want to see probably in concert in the next year or two. I've heard some good things, and I really enjoyed her Tiny Desk, so I'm just happy to see recognition.
Emotion was also super well received, and I think because critics really liked it so much, she was able to be more indie pop than mainstream pop, like she had been initially pitched to people, and everybody sort of realized that she's not just a one-hit wonder. It's just that that one particular song has that strange mixture of ingredients that nobody can really ever replicate that just sort of took off. But that I think Emotion is her best album, even though I do like Julian. I think Emotion is much stronger and has more of a clear point of view. But I also would like to see her live because I've heard nothing but good things. Another top four artist, speaking of Tiny Desks, that I really enjoyed was Megan Thee Stallion. I think she was like my most played new artist. And of course, Fever isn't on the Pitchfork's best albums of 2010s. It's still super good. And talk about like a whole story. And she's everything that you want from a rapper. Like, she's smart, she's funny, she's quick. She has a really distinct voice and style that's all of her own, apart from like all the hot girl stuff. Just if you listen to her flows, even her freestyles are amazing. She's just great and overall is like super charming, really funny. And the city of Houston is having a huge year between her and Normani and Beyonce. Beyonce put out the Homecoming live album, which is why, because I listened to it so much because I was so into the documentary. It made Beyonce my artist of 2019, which I was not surprised by because I took a couple road trips where I exclusively played that entire album front to back and then back to front again and probably made some people a little annoyed. But it's not my fault. It's so good. Tell her.
I have to hand it to a Tiny Desk concert. They're always great. I almost always enjoy them. But in the last 6 months, I think they've done a big shift to focus on a lot. They'd had R&B hip-hop artists in the past, but I think in the last 6 months, I've seen quite a few that have just been fantastic. Megan Thee comes to mind. Lizzo had a really great one a couple months ago.
This tiny-ass desk. Oh, yeah, she is my top. She is the other top artist. It's her and Maggie Rogers round out my top four of 2019. And that makes complete sense because I think every single mix that I made myself this year had songs from all of them at some point in time. But I think, you know, to borrow from our favorite podcast and Bobby and Lindsay, she definitely went from Who to Them this year for sure. And I think it was sealed at this point when she closed out SNL last Saturday with Eddie Murphy hosting. So I think there's no greater way of saying like you made it. But speaking of SNL performances that were really good, someone that didn't make this list but is in the Spotify Wrapped of my heart is DaBaby, and I am definitely a DaBaby mama. I think that Kirk is really good. It's a really strong start, and his SNL performance was probably like the most fun, obviously outside of Lizzo, but Lizzo hadn't performed yet, so I couldn't compare the two or, you know, mention them in the same sentence. But I thought his performance on SNL was so much fun. It was so silly. He brought back the Jabberwockies, so what's there to not like?
It was already a fantastic performance. I was really enjoying everything that was going on stage, and all of a sudden the Jabberwockies just kind of showed up, and I'm like, this is fantastic. Cannot support it up. Every time I hear an interview or something with him, I'm always, I really enjoy him. He's great. I love his music. I've become a big fan. Cannot say enough good things. Honestly, in this last year, I think it's been a really banner year for good, like, hip-hop artists that didn't get as much recognition as they should have, and are being featured a lot on shows like SNL and Tiny Desk Concert, and to see that shift, I'm happy to see them get that recognition. For how much shit went down in 2019 that it didn't like, this was something that made me happy.
Yeah, I actually have really enjoyed these year-end lists. They've been interesting to take in. I am too easily annoyed and have too strong of opinions to go into any of the film lists because I always think that they get it wrong. But I think the music stuff has been the most interesting because people are less fanboy-y about music stuff than they are about movies, and that makes it kind of unfun. But music is always interesting to compare. That's why so many people posted about their fucking Spotify rap, no matter your thoughts on the matter. And it was interesting to compare them all between friends and even coworkers. But one thing I didn't know was one of our coworkers only has Apple Music, and so they don't do a Wrapped. So we were like talking about it in front of him. We're like, oh, Anthony, what's your, oh yeah, you don't get one, sorry. And then this week he was like, oh my god, they sent me like top artists of the last 10 years. I'm like, girl, everybody got that list, like that's not special.
Spotify, you know, and it addition to discovering new music, is just like being able to listen to an artist's back catalog. Like, I think before I would know an artist and think that I didn't like them or I was kind of ambivalent about them, but with Spotify, you know, just being able to listen to an entire artist's back catalog and really get to know them and have a better sound opinion about them has been great. And just to see like where some of these artists have come from. So like knowing, you know, that Lizzo, if you kind of were just tuning in and finding out who she was and you hadn't known who she was a couple of years ago, you wouldn't know that she had released, you know, X number of EPs, had been touring for God knows how many years, and had just put out so much music. In fact, like, Good as Hell, I'm pretty sure, is a song that, you know, she had released years ago, and that is what...
And Truth Hurts, like, a lot of her songs... A lot of her songs had already been out, and I actually credit Spotify with introducing me to Lizzo during the Phone, like her little EP of four songs that has like Coconut Oil and Phone and a couple and Water Me and a couple of other songs. Because I think that was on, they have so many algorithmically, and you know, obviously they used our data to make this really well designed, well executed Spotify Wrapped for You experience where like they played the music and there was a journey and they did cute little copy things like you're genre fluid, which I definitely scoffed out loud at. But
I got the same thing. I was like,
I think all of us did. That was the slide, Emily. So like they have the copy is already just written and then the algorithm or and then the data is just sort of supplied in the back end, and so it just populates with whatever.
I just couldn't believe someone in marketing.
Dude, yes you can. Yes you fucking can. Have you the number of dumb shit that we've seen in advertising? You're surprised that that made it through? Of course, some like executive was like, that's cute. I get it. That's funny." I'm sure the feedback was like, "Make it cute," and that was what the poor copywriter came up with. But anyway, thanks to their playlists though. They give with both hands, right? It's like some evil and some good. I found out about Lizzo because they have this like Release Radar playlist that they update every week. And it has songs from all over the place. And sometimes it's old songs and sometimes it's new songs. And you just kind of put it on Fridays and you just get a new mix of artists. And I think that's also how I got into Haim as well. They were on that and they played The Wire was on that mix that week. So, and I thought Phone, the Lizzo song was so fucking funny. I had to like listen to everything by this artist. And that's how it all started. So I think
that's definitely how I got into Maggie Rogers and I think Lucy Dacus, that's our Dacus, I'm not how you should, sure you pronounce her name, but that's how I got into her as well.
But to your point about listening to an artist's back catalog, Spoon was my 2017 Artist of the Year, and I've been listening to Spoon since high school, but I had only listened to whatever their popular albums was, so like an album of Sneaks and like a couple of other side albums that I would have never been able to listen to because I didn't even know they existed, I can listen to thanks to Spotify. And I swear this is not an ad. So it's just more of like how Spotify shaped the decade and how we listen to music and find new artists now. And a lot of the artists that they have on the Pitchfork Best Album list are people, some of them are people that I have discovered thanks to them or have been able to listen to it more easily because it's now online and I can listen to it whenever, however. And of course, Drake's Take Care, which is my favorite Drake album because it's peak sad boy music from 2011, is number 13 on the list. And, you know, that's why he was my Artist of the Year in 2011 and 2016 and Artist of the fucking Decade. So whack. Oh, well.
Any other ones for you that stick out? I have one in particular that I'll talk about, but are there any others for you that really stick out?
I mean, I wouldn't say stick out. The other ones that they have are like Alabama Shakes, Sound and Color. I love that album. Beyonce's 4, obviously. Kendrick's Good Kid, Mad City, which was the introduction to Kendrick Lamar. And definitely, I think, is when you go back and listen to it now, you're like, oh, wow, yeah, no, I kind of understand his trajectory that he's on currently. And this all kind of makes sense as like a piece for his entire career. But those are, oh, and Kacey Musgraves' Golden Hour. I mean, again, Spotify on a playlist of like unexpected singles or some shit like that. And Kacey Musgraves is on there. And I was like, oh, my God, Golden Hour is a no skips album. So it's such a great album. So glad that we saw her live.
For sure. Well, I saw her with you, but then a year prior, it opened for Harry Styles.
Oh, yeah.
And I knew about her when she was a lot more kind of country and that her song sounded a bit twangier. And I always was a fan just because she's been really outspoken about like talking about LGBTQ people and acknowledging that they exist, which is like something people in Nashville don't do in those songs. I mean, obviously in Nashville, yes, but like in country music, it's usually just like white dudes with pickup trucks. So
right.
I was just happy to see.
Or as I found out tragically at karaoke recently, your body is back road? Yeah, that was a song that someone sang, and I almost left the bar. I was like, I don't need to hear this. This is gross. I want to go, like, 25 in your 30 zone or some shit. I'm like, ew, this is, I am going to call the police on this white man. This is upsetting. I didn't even know it was a song. So many people sing country for karaoke, and I do not get it when there are literally thousands of songs. Sure, you're not singing about bodies being back roads or whatever.
No, surprisingly, that doesn't appeal. In terms of albums that stick out to me on this list that I'm happy to see, I mean, we've talked about Ariana Grande in our song Pitchfork episode, but I'm just happy to see Sweetener on here. I think it was a good album. And then finally for me, Janelle Monáe, The Arch Android. I just thought that was a fantastic album, and I'm really happy to see that, you know, in the last 5 years, she's just been getting more recognition. But just seeing her as seeing her in all these capacities, I just want nothing but good things. I think she's fantastic. I think she's stunning, and I always enjoy everything she comes out with.
Well, did we do it? Did we manage to record a whole mini episode?
I think we did.
God, I sure hope so.
Well,
I think this is going to be our last episode, not only of 2019, but the whole decade as well. So we hope you guys have a happy holiday and a happy new year in 2020. And thanks for listening. And if you are feeling extra merry and bright and giving, it'd be great if you could rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you can do that. And don't forget to subscribe or tell somebody, because guess what? That's a free gift right there. You don't even have to buy anything. Just tell them about a podcast. And in the meantime, if you want to keep up with us, you can check out our socials. We are on Instagram at The Old Millennials Pod.
We are also on Facebook at The Old Millennials Pod.
And you can follow us on Twitter. I am at Margs, she wrote.
And I'm at Emily A. Vision.
And until next year, bye.